Judges 17. Now there was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. He said to his mother, "The 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing, behold, the silver is with me. I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be my son by the Lord." He then returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother, and his mother said, "I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a graven image and a molten image. Now, therefore, I will return them to you." So when he returned the silver to his mother took took 200 pieces of silver and gave them to the silversmith, who made them into a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. And the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household idols and consecrated one of his sons that he might become a priest. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. Now there was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah, the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he was staying there. Then the man departed from the city, from Bethlehem in Judah, to stay wherever he might find a place. And as he made his journey, he came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah. Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I am going to stay wherever I may find a place." Micah said to him, "Dwell with me and be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 pieces of silver a year, a suit of clothes, and your maintenance." So the Levite went in. The Levite agreed to live with the man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became a priest and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will prosper me, seeing I have a Levite as a priest." Chapter 18. In those days there was no king in Israel. In those days the tribe of the Danites were seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in. For until that day an inheritance had not been allotted to them as a possession among the tribes of Israel. So the sons of Dan sent from their family 5 men out of their whole number, valiant men from Zorah of Eshtaol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said to them, "Go, search the land." And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. When they were near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite. And they turned aside there and said to him, "Who brought you here? And what are you doing in this place? And what do you have here?" He said to them, "Thus and so has Micah done to me, and he has hired me, and I have become his priest." They said to him, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous." The priest said to them, "Go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval." Then the 5 men departed and came to Laish and said to the people who were living in it in security after the matter of the Sidonians, "Quiet and secure. For there was no ruler humiliating them for anything in the land, and they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone." When they came back to the brothers of Zorah and Eshtaol, their brother said to him, "What do you report?" They said, "Arise and let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And you will sit still? Do not delay to go, to enter, to possess the land. When you enter, you will come to a secure people with a spacious land, for God has given it into your hand, a land where there is lack of nothing that is on the earth." Then from the family of the Danites, from Zorah and from Eshtaol, 600 men armed with weapons of war set out. They went up and camped at Kiriath Yearim in Judah. Therefore, they called the place Manah Dan to this day. Behold, it is west in Kiriat Yearim. They passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the five men who went out to spy out the country of Laish said to their kinsmen, "Do you know that there are in these houses an ephod and household gods and a graven image and a molten image? Now therefore, consider what you should do." They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare. The 600 men armed with their weapons of war, who were sons of Dan, stood at the entrance of the gate. Now the five men who went out to spy out the land went up and entered there and took the graven images and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood by at the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. When these went into Micah's house and took the graven image, the ephod, and the household idols, and the molten image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" They said to him, "Be silent. Put your hand over your mouth and come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man or to be priest to a tribe and a family in Israel?" The priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the household gods and the graven image and went among the people. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. When they were gone some distance from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house assembled and overtook the sons of Dan. They cried to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you that you have assembled together?" He said, "You have taken away my gods which I made, and the priest, and have gone away. And what do I have besides? So how can you say to me, 'What is the matter with you?'" The sons of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, or else fierce men will fall upon you, and you will lose your life with the lives of your household." So the sons of Dan went on their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. Then he took what Micah had made, and the priest who had belonged to him, and came to Laish, to a people quiet and secure, and struck them with the edge of the sword, and they were burned with fire. And there was no one to deliver them, because it was far from Sidon, and they had no dealings with anyone. And it was in the valley, which is near Beit Rehob, they rebuilt the city and lived in it. They called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan their father, who was born in Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. And the sons of Dan set up for themselves the graven image. And Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests to go to the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's graven image, which he had made all the time that the house of God was at Shiloh.
Thank you, Jeff, for reading Judges 17 and 18. Before I go into my commentary and discussion and have this an interesting storyline about this, are there any comments, questions, or things that caught your attention during these chapters? I realize we did both chapters. Those of you guys, chapter 17 is super short, and most of the storyline is in chapter 18. I want to be able to get the whole story because we kind of Mike is only there for a short period of time, and the story really isn't about him. It's actually about the lad, the priest. The stories are actually more about folks, about who this person was, which we'll get into detail who he actually really was. Well, they didn't name him initially, they named him later. Any questions or comments?
Yep.
Yes, Tammy.
I find it interesting because this is actually the first hint of the fact that the people of Israel were already leaning towards adopting the practices of the pagans in regards to worship to God. They started to make idols. But yet later on, when you read in the time of the kings, Jeroboam is always blamed for it.
Right.
But in reality,
he didn't start it.
There was the underlying ideas
had been around
in
a while.
The culture of the north well before Jeroboam ever came along. But yet, when you read later on in Kings and so on, they talk about the sin of Jeroboam.
Right.
Well, the sin of Jeroboam, in some ways, is actually the sin of, like, of Micah and his priests.
And his priests.
He did not remove the sin. He endorsed it.
He endorsed it. That's true. Which is, either way, he didn't start it. But she's absolutely right. Idol worship and creating one's own idol is not uncommon, at least up this point. And as the judges have come and they died off or slowly got worse, the judge of the quality of the judge, the people also got worse. They kind of follow the leadership. That's the nature of most people. They follow their leaders. The leaders diminish, they diminish.
Yeah.
Yes, Ellie.
Also, the old saying that there's a God-shaped hole inside of everybody. These people don't have anybody to give them any guidance, and so they're seeking God.
They are. They are absolutely right. They're seeking. They're trying to do what they think is right.
But they're trying because Micah says, oh, finally I'll know God is with me.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to find God.
But God wasn't with him at this point.
No.
Actually, he wasn't with him at all. We'll discuss that in a minute. But you're right. They're continuously seeking. And Danites, the people who were traveling. It wasn't all the tribe of Dan, by the way. It's only
just a
few families located above the bottom end, which we won't discuss why they were moving yet. We'll get there hopefully in a few minutes. But a few of them moved. The majority of the tribe stayed down where the territory was. Yes.
Understand the whole significance through both chapters. The whole story follows the ephod and the idols.
Yeah.
It begins with it and ends with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, you know, just as far as the importance, why he would build an ephod and idols.
What was his motivation?
Right.
Yeah. Yes, Pat.
Two other things. One is Micah consecrated the Levite, which
correct.
I'm curious about that. And then all through it talks about that there was no king in Israel.
Yes.
What is the significance of
what does that mean?
Yeah.
Right. Why is that such a big deal?
Why are they making a big deal of that?
Those are legitimate points, and I'm going to get to them. As far as why the story seems to follow the idols and the ephod and whatnot, that has a lot to do with the priest himself, who he actually was and why he was so important. There's a reason why the Danites recognized his voice. He wasn't some ordinary little lad that nobody knew about. Just some Levi. Whoop-de-doo. No, he's actually a very important individual. He was an important individual long before this, which we'll get into that as well. We'll discuss who he actually was. We don't usually talk about this particular family's line, but we'll get there when we get to his name. Yes, sorry.
I was looking at it, and it says that with the shekels, they built the idol.
Yes.
And I was like, so even back then, they worshiped money, huh?
Some things never change. That's true. It's actually, which I think it's fitting that Micah, who stole the money to begin with, has the money stolen from him later. I mean, it's just well played out. Which I think is comical. They it was 1,100 pieces of silver. 200 go to the idol maker. The remaining 900 is what they melted down and made the idols out of. And it's actually more than one. I know it says a carved, but also it's a molten. Actually, they're two actually separate idols. They had two different pieces. They're two different designs, two different functions. It's quite common, like Middle Eastern or so Far Eastern cultures have multiple gods in their homes. They look same stone, look differently, but same stone being made out of. It's quite common. No different than the Canaanites and the Philistines that are hanging around here. Okay, I think I'll be able to answer each of the questions as I go through this, because they're all part of what I want to talk about. Yeah. If I miss something, please bring it up again when it comes to an end. Okay. This is a debate. First of all, we don't know when this story took place. We don't know if it happened immediately following Samson's death, or if it happened really early on during Othniel, when the first judges, or even possibly during Joshua's time. The deal is, the story is somewhat out of place. And the reason they think it's out of place is the quantity of people mentioned as a 600-man army. I'm sorry, that's nothing, considering Samson, the chapter earlier, kill 1,000 men with a donkey's bone or jawbone, and that was just the people to come arrest him. That wasn't even an army. It's just this is just the people to arrest him. He killed those. And that the 3,000 or 4,000 was that he killed for the temple and he crashed that down. In an era where there are large armies, this is a very small army. So it's relatively, it was unusual, out of place. Now, the reason I'm bringing this out of place is because it's indicative of the earlier judges who had small armies. They had armies of a few hundred people. Their populations weren't very big at that time. So they're not sure. Maybe it's just a small section of Dan they don't know about. The other Achilles heel, which they point out maybe earlier, is the name of the Levite and how old he actually was and what era he lived in, that he would have been earlier on in the Judges, not later. So they don't know when for sure this took place, but and it's also out of place from the following chapters when they say they bring up a 400,000-man army, the next chapter, in chapter 19. Well, okay, you go from small numbers to huge numbers, something's amiss. So they don't know when it happened. Bottom line, no king in Israel. What does that mean?
Still nomads.
No leaders
before David's time.
Before David's time, that is absolutely true. No leadership is more accurate, though. In that the judges were not able to bring these people into following God. Joshua couldn't even do that. It actually mentions Joshua's time before he died. He's only there helping these people conquer territory for a few years. I mean, 7, maybe 10. Before he died, they had already said, okay, forget God. Sure, I mean, that doesn't take, it's not very long. It's really fast. So they abandoned God pretty quick. Not all people, but well, some of them did.
And it said everybody did what was right in their own eyes.
Which is the precise word statement that happens at the beginning of the book of Judges. Every man did what was right in his own eyes, and God was not pleased with it. So it's funny that that same phrase would come up again, which kind of implies this may have actually been a long time ago, prior to Samson being born. Because Samson, by the way, is from the same area that these men came from. Now, other side of the coin, it could also have been equally late. In that they may have also realized, these men of Dan, that once Samson died, oh, we're not going to get saved from the Philistines. We need to find our own territory. So, and they may have said, okay, they had their hope in Samson. Once he was captured and killed, all right, we're not having a savior, we just leave. It could be either way. So no one knows for sure. But I'll bring that out because it's important to note it's going to actually play a little bit into our discussion today. Because they're both possible, but in my opinion, one's more likely. No king in Israel. Very important. No judges. What does a king or a judge do? First of all, what does a judge do? We'll discuss the king in a minute. What does a judge do? What have the judges been doing?
They've been deciding or leading people and
leading people?
Establishing what is right and what is wrong.
Exactly. Now, what did their...
Instituting
the laws. Yeah, one of their tasks, yes, they led people in battle, but they also go around the countryside with their sons or with whatever else was available and help people judge matters of law, like we would think of a judge.
Circuit judge.
Like a circuit judge, exactly. Their sons would go out, and we discussed that. Previously, they had sons on colts, and they'd go wandering the countryside, helping people decide legal matters. That's one of their tasks. The other is to muster people up together to go to battle, which is also one of their tasks. It's kind of a mix between a judge and a warlord. It's kind of just all combo. Yes, Ellie.
It's how the whole West was settled.
It is. It is quite common. And people don't change. People are the same then, they are now, then they'll change. Yes, Tammy.
Even in some of the more rural areas like in Montana, they still have circuit judges.
Who travel
around to hear cases. So it's
even in the happen.
First century, in the most advanced country on God's green earth, we still have judges that
traveling
get in
like
their
that.
Car and they travel and they hear cases.
So it's a common task.
I
used to do it.
Yeah.
That's
what I was
going
to say. California.
You could use some better judges.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, so those are what judges do. Now,
circus judges?
Circus judges. Not circus judges. that means they probably wouldn't come to California. That'd be a problem. Okay, so that's what judges do. Now, kings had the same, not same, but had some similar functions. A king would muster people together to go to war. They also set the tone for what is right and what is wrong. If a king did something, okay, well, it's okay if the people do it too. That's quite common. We will run across as we go through the king's story. You have one of the most famous corrupt ones, King Manasseh, who sacrificed his own children. And what happened? The whole country went downhill. The whole country, all the people were held partially responsible. Why? Because they were doing just as corrupt things as he was. He says, okay, oh, well, we can do it too. Judges and leadership have key roles. That's one of the reasons why God is so much harder on them. They make a mistake. It's not some simple thing to, oh, well, it's just a minor thing. He did his own personal family. You know, we need to do it. It affects everybody. And that's why it's very critical to be a good leader. So no king in Israel or no judge either means there's no one to say, hey, Micah, you can't do this. What you're doing is actually wrong. And then usually they would kill him, but he didn't have that opportunity. There was no judge to kill Micah for what he did. they weren't bloodless people, by the way. They were the judge and executioner mostly. Okay, so that's why that phrase is important, why it pops up in these two chapters. I mean, it pops up again in the following chapter as well, 19. Okay. No matter what time this took place, whether it was early on or later on, no judge in Israel. Well, we just went through most of the book of Judges. And there's been, once one judge dies, another one comes up. So if it was early on, When was there not a judge? When they're occupied. Israel was occupied quite frequently, not all the time, but they occupied for years at a time. 8 years may pass, in one case 10, and in the case of Philistines, I think 50. A long time happens where, yeah, people exist, and judges which God was raising up come to rule, but there's a time which there is no judge to, because God didn't select that person yet. They're not ready. That's normal. That happens. So it could be either way. But it's important to note that whatever happened, when it did, it happened when a judge was not available to do anything about it. Or willing to know who the judge was. Because it could also be Abimelech, who was a horrible judge, and he was a terrible person, and no one would have thought he wouldn't do it any right anyway. But not that I'm opinionated on it. So, Micah returns the silver, verse 2. Why? Did he say why?
The curse.
You notice he didn't say because it was wrong. He didn't say because God would be upset. No, because mom, because you cursed the person who did it. He was more afraid of the curse his mother uttered than what was right. Mm-hmm. Tells you the character of the person, of what kind of person we're dealing with. He fears man more than God. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because of his name. We read it, the English translates the name as Micah, right? Well, the first four verses, his name is not spelt Micah.
Correct.
His name is spelt Micaiahu, or Micaiahu. I mean, the name of God is at the end of his name.
Who is
like God? Who's God? Yeah. God is in his name. He abandoned his God by creating these images, by creating these idols. So what happened? Well, guess what the Israelite scholars or Samuel himself, we don't know which one, said, you don't need God in your name, and removed it. So he was Micah from that point forward. And English has always translated him as Micah. They don't care how it's spelled the first three or four times his name is brought up. And verse 2, it's spelled Micaiahu. I think verse, let's go get back to where it was here. Verse 5 is where it changes. So verse 4 is spelled Micaiahu, and I think it's verse 4 and verse 2. Verse 1, I apologize, verse 2. Verse 1 and verse 4. It's his full name spelling. Once he accepted these idols, God was no longer with him. So, the person who was writing the story down, which, as all indications, seems to be Samuel, was writing the story down. He's the one who compiled all this stuff. He said, all right, I'm taking God out of your name. He has no association with you. Why? Because Samuel's a smart person. He knew who Micah was. He knows the stories. He already knows the story at the end because he's the one who's writing it. Meaning he's the one who's writing it down. He's already read it. So he knows Micah's not a very honorable person. So once Micah accepted idols, You don't need to be God. There is no association with you. He did have one redeeming quality. I'll give it to him, which I think it's the only one he actually has. Verse 2, he says, here's the money. So I'll bless you. I'm going to give it to God and to make an image, which apparently his mother has no problems with making images in the name of God. For whatever reason, she doesn't see a problem with this. She names him. She names God, but that's okay. You can make an image you want, which is not uncommon. It happened in that time. Yes, Jeff.
Golden calf?
Yes, a golden calf is a common one. And making images is not necessarily uncommon. It happens.
No, but I mean making images in God's name.
In God's name. Yeah. That's true. That's true. So using it, she had no problem with this. She obviously didn't read the story of the golden calf or didn't remember it too well.
Badly.
Yeah, it wasn't a positive story. So she had no problem with this. But apparently he did it first. At first he did. He didn't want to be the one responsible for it. Verse 3. It says, he returned 1,100 pieces of silver. So said, I had resolved to consecrate the money to the Lord to make carved image. So now I'll give back to you. Verse 4. He returned the money to his mother. Again. He just returned it to her. She's giving it back to him. He returns it to her again. He won't be the one who's going to make the image. And notice, he doesn't. She does. So his mother took the 200 of it and gave it to the silversmith, or gave it to the mold maker. His mother is the one who actually went out and had the images made. Not that he is somehow thus absolved, it's just that he didn't want to take the responsibility for doing it. There was a statement, which I won't say who said it, but it caught me off guard, and I was like, holy cow. Person said, well, isn't it quite, somebody had suggested to another individual, why don't you make your own gods instead of purchasing them? This was recent. And she says, well, isn't that awfully, was it arrogant, I believe is the word, or to make your own gods?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. It's a piece of metal. Who cares who makes it? I can make it. I can make this table my god if I want to. Arrogant? It doesn't matter. I can make it a god if I wanted to. Is it really going to help me in any way? Probably not. But it's just a piece. It's just an object. But apparently, the issue of making gods bothered Micah. He didn't want to be responsible for making them. For whatever reason, he accepted them later, but that's his only redeeming quality that I have found in his story. I apologize to the man. There may have been more, but that's all that's recorded. Okay. So I'll give him credit for that. He didn't want to be responsible, but he accepted it right after it was made. So that didn't make any difference. Okay. Now is when the story actually begins. This lad, this young man from Bethlehem. Now it says Bethlehem, Judah. Now remember, I don't remember actually, you probably don't remember. Bethlehem was actually divided into two cities during Joshua's time. The bottom half was Judah's and the northern half was Benjamin's. So there's Bethlehem of Judah and there's Bethlehem of Benjamin. There's a distinction. Now that he's from the southern end of it. That's kind of important why he's from the southern end as opposed to the northern end. That's one of the reasons why the Danites know him. And recognize his voice.
Where did you find that?
Find what?
That Bethlehem was divided.
Oh, it's actually in the book of Joshua. When Joshua dictates the territories, he tells Judah, all right, these are all your territories, and gives them all of what is currently called the territory of Benjamin. Benjamin said, a lot of other tribes did as well, said, wait a minute, what are we going to get? You give everything to Judah and Ephraim, well, what about the rest of us? And he said, well, you guys go find out territories, find out spaces, find out lines, and we'll cast by lots and you'll get whatever you get. Well, Benjamin's lot split right through Bethlehem. It actually, Bethlehem was its border. And Bethlehem's also Judah's border. So half is north, half is south. It's split in half. So we have Bethlehem of Judah and Bethlehem of Benjamin. All right? So that's how it's a border town.
Yeah, historically, it's always a bad idea.
And like Kansas City.
Yes, like Kansas City. You never want to divide cities. It's always unwise.
Well, Judah is of Leah, and
Benjamin is
from Rachel.
Rachel.
And that's why in the New Testament, Rachel was way before her children.
Connected the same.
Because it's the same story. The fact
that
tied together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes contact. Yeah,
yeah,
that makes sense, yeah.
Okay, so let's continue on. Okay, he was a Levite, though. He just lived in a town. He's a Levite. Just means tribe of Levi. Doesn't say which family, just the tribe of Levi. He was from any of the families. Aaron had two sons, but then they divided up later. But Levi himself had different families. There was the Kohath, Merari, and Gershon. Three different families, which they all belonged to. So is he just from there? Could be anyone that's Aaron, I believe. Aaron was from, was it Gershon? I don't remember.
Aaron.
No. Levi's children. This is the separation of families. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We'll discuss that in shortly. So he takes off, leaves wherever he's from, goes to Bethlehem, leaves Bethlehem. He's looking for a job. Good enough reason to leave. Look for a job. Why? He's a Levite. Doesn't he have anything he wants?
He's supposed to go teach.
He has to go teach. See, most people forget Levites actually have jobs, yeah, independent of what God gave them. Because God gave all, you know, partial of the tithes, partial of the first fruits, all these wonderful things, which they get a fraction of, that Israel's supposed to bring to them each year. And they distribute amongst themselves whatever is right. Well, the higher up you are on that stream, the more stuff you get. The high priest gets the most. I mean, that's just how. Why? Because they have the most stuff to do. Anything goes wrong, they're the ones responsible, not the person who did it. So they have extra stuff they require. Well, not all Levites got that job. What did the rest of them go do? I mean, you only have so many people who have to go grab water and carry water to the temple. Eventually, you have so much water in the temple, you don't need more people to bring water. Okay, find another job. Well, their other task was to teach. Their task is to roam the countryside. That's the reason why all the Levite towns are scattered throughout all of Israel. There's no one place that has a high concentration. It's all over the place. They're amongst the people to teach, to assist them. Teach them about God, teach them how to read, teach them how to write, teach them the basics of what is what we call an instructor today. That's their job, and they're paid for that. The wealthier the family, the more likely the family's going to own or have a live-in instructor. It's quite common then, not so common now. Now we have public institutions, but then they didn't have public institutions. So that's their task. He needs a job. He goes find, guess what? He finds Micah, who apparently is extremely wealthy, considering he has two statues, both combined together, and 900 pieces of silver, which, according to Samson, is nearly $1 billion worth.
In modern money.
So he was wealthy, okay? Now realize, that's modern money, all right? We, back then, are all classified as peasants, okay? None of us are of any value. We're the cannon fodder, I guess you'd call it. We don't make a whole lot, so the people who made more had more. Micah was one of them, or at least Micah's family was. He dwelt in the hills or the mountains of Ephraim. Who else used to dwell there? Joshua used to dwell there. That was his hometown. So did Deborah dwell there. There were actually a couple of judges who lived in the same area. So it's not uncommon for people to have inheritance that passes through and territory stays wealthy. Anyway, so let's go beyond that. Let's see here. Okay, so Micah asks, where do you come from? Now, does Micah know who this kid is?
No, apparently not. I have to ask him where he's from.
Yeah, who are you? Oh, I'm a Levite from Bethlehem of Judah. I'm traveling where I will find it suitable, where I can make a living. Micah says, stay with me now and become my father priest. Now, earlier, Micah created his temple and his ephod, basically it's a temple, his household temple, created his ephod and created his idols, and he played his son as priest initially. How'd that go out for him? It didn't really work so well, did it? Yeah, because why?
His son didn't know what he was doing.
His son didn't know
what he was doing.
He's not a priest.
Dad, what to do.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be a son. Okay, no, Dad, you must bow this manner. You know, you must bow that manner. You must pay. It's not so easy to go around doing that. Levites know a little bit more about that. So Micah was actually quite excited to find a Levite. Hey, this guy can actually be a real priest instead of the garbage one that my son is. And guess what? He got rid of his son's priesthood. He dethroned him and gave it to the Levite. Why? Because he didn't want his son as priest.
He just said that wasn't a good
enough. That wasn't good enough. But Levite, obviously they're better. Why? Because God ordained them. And what was going through his mind? Okay, I've created this temple with my ephod and my graven images. God sent me a Levite. Oh, he must like what I've created. He's blessing me by sending me a Levite. Isn't this wonderful? God acknowledges my temple I have created. It's actually a desirable effect. That's what you would want. Oh, wow, God noticed. This is wonderful. I'm going to get blessed beyond my wildest dreams kind of thing. Because God has blessed me. And not just any Levite. This is a very powerful one. There's a reason why he influences the northern tribes of Israel in the future. His family line does, that is. Okay, so he's quite happy, the Levite. He's now going to be thrilled. He's got this young lad. And now this lad, being a Levite, did he know what was right and wrong? He should have. He would have been taught. His parents would have taught him. His grandparents would have taught him. People were raising him. This is what it means to be a Levite. They knew what was right and wrong. So did he know graven images were probably not a good idea? Most likely he sure as heck did. Same thing with an ephod, making your own priestly garment outside of the temples. You don't get away with that. Gideon tried to do that. Look what happened to him. It destroyed that family. So literally destroyed it. They're all dead. they were all killed for it. So it's not a good idea. They have precedence. You don't do it. And what did the Levite say? Oh, yes, I'll be, but you have to get rid of these items. No, he didn't, did he? Why?
Might get fired.
The guy needs a job. Money, clothes. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. He's a young man.
Yeah.
He's looking for work. He probably doesn't have as strong of a moral compass as he's supposed to for a Levite. He may have left his family's house a little too young. I don't know. For whatever reason, he opted not to correct Micah. Instead, he said, okay, he took all those items and used them. Basically created or endorsed this temple. Not an honorable Levite. He knew what was right. As a Levite, he would have known. And the type of Levite he was, he would have known. He was a different kind. So, basically, bottom line, father and priest sound really good. It strokes a young man's ego. A little bit of money. You got it. I'll do it. Not a problem. So, he goes along and says, yay, this is what I'll do. So, he's priest. Micah's thrilled. He says at verse 13, as I mentioned earlier, now I know the Lord will be good to me, for this Levite has become my priest. God has verified my temple is wonderful because of what this Levite did. All right. The story's not about Micah, though. It's about the Levite. Let's move to Judges chapter 18, where the story continues. I realize this is a long section to read, and I'm hoping to get through it pretty quickly. Still, there's no king in Israel. I mean, there's no central authority. For whatever reason, it doesn't make a difference. The Danites, they got to leave. Whether or not it's because the Philistines are too strong and they can't conquer them, or the Canaanites are too strong and they can't conquer them, they want a better territory. So they're looking for another territory. They stop by Micah's house. Hey, I recognize that voice. Why would they recognize the voice? He's just a Levite. I mean, this should be probably hundreds of years later after the Levites were... There are probably thousands of Levites, and they happen to recognize one voice who was from Bethlehem, not even in their territory. But these five individuals recognize his voice.
And how did you get here?
And how did you get here? Why are you here instead of where you belong? Where does he belong? And again, has to do with who his ancestors are and who actually he really is. He's not the high priest, by the way. Don't go there. But he's actually an important individual. So they recognize his voice. They say, go ask. Now, the Danites are aware that there was an idol there. So they asked him, when they said, go ask for this, to go investigate, Verse, inquire of God. The word God they used was Elohim. Just generic, plain, simple gods. It could be any god. Go ask the idol you're using. Go ask anything else. Just ask, inquire for us. But he doesn't respond using that word. He responds in the word of the Lord. He actually uses God's name. It says, he is with you. It says that the priest said, go in peace. The journey in which you is in accordance with Yahuwah, or the name of God. So he actually is invoking the name of God and blessing this prospect. So is the prospect going to succeed? Most likely, it will. He's a Levite priest who has invoked the name of God and blessed something. Most likely it will succeed. Whether it should or not doesn't make a difference. Most likely it will succeed.
What was the name of the Lord he used?
The four letters.
Oh.
Yes. So five went out, men went out, they went to Leish. Now Leish is way up here on my little map. I got my Dan marked up here. Now I realize my map's not like a topographical map, but if you could see what it looks like in today, or back then as well, I have these little black lines. If we're like, these are tributaries. It's actually a very lush, flat valley. Well protected. It actually is Mount Hermon on this side, protecting it from anybody coming that direction, from Syria, that area, has Mount Lebanon on the other side, which protects them from the Sidonians. It's actually a great little spot to be, and it has wonderful rain. It's got four or five tributaries all flooding into this small little lake down here, which eventually feeds the Jordan and goes into Galilee and down the Dead Sea. Great place to have. Great place to occupy, to own. Nothing to worry about. You're surrounded by all these wonderful mountains that'll protect you from invading armies. Anyone wants to come attack you, they have to come down south first and come up to get you. They got to go through a few other people before they get to you. So it's a really, really well-protected spot. So they go to Laish. By the way, they burn it, and of course, name it Dan. But they go to Laish. They find out, okay, this is the complacent people. No issue in the land could cause them embarrassment. Or no, they're not paying tribute to anyone. There's nobody that says, oh, I own this territory. And that's a key thing. If I want to go take something, and somebody bigger than me owns it, not a good idea. Normally, I'm going to lose that battle. Now, Moab had lost that battle. They tried to take something, or Ammon, sorry, tried to take something that shouldn't have they belonged to Moab, which the Israelites took. They didn't own it. They're bigger than you. You can't take the area that's bigger than you. So to verify, does anybody own the area? It's under the influence of the Sidonians, which is actually what we call Lebanon people, further north, that area, which they turned into Phoenicians later. But no ownership. The Sidonians don't own the area. They just happen to know the people they trade back and forth. Great spot to be in. And since Dan has no worries about coming north, because all these Israelite tribes say, hey, how's it going? And let him go. They can go right through without worry about somebody saying, hey, you can't walk through my territory. Because they're all family. Now, if any other nation tried to do that, they have to defeat all the Israelites before they get to them. So the area, as far as they're concerned, these little Laishans, are actually really well protected. Except they're not protected from Israel. In this case, Dan. Travel up north. They got no problems. Great. They come back down south, their families, hey, let's get going. They all get together, about 600 or so men, with their women, their children, their livestock, everything to pack up and leave. Now they're leaving this little Zora area, which is the southern end of Dan near Judah's territory, traveling north. This is 100 times more lush than down in the desert. It just is. This is not a very pleasant place to be, as even today. Gaza Strip's not a very wonderful, lush, growing area. It just isn't. Yeah, it's next to the ocean, but that's about the only redeeming quality. So leaving is not unheard of. A few families leave. We don't know how many. Enough to muster up these people. They stop at Micah's house. I'm going through the story quickly because I want to get to this guy's name. They stop at Micah's house to, hey, there's a priest here. There's a graven image here. There's an ephod here. So, of course, they go in there. They find which one the Levite is living in, which building. Take everything he has. Levite protests at first until his ego gets stroked again. just like last time, be a father priest, well, be a father priest to a whole family, not just one man. Oh, well, okay. Again, ego. I can do this. Not a problem. Yes, Hank.
So the idols were going with...
The idols were going. He can't stick around. He's no value to Micah if the idols are gone. So he might as well leave. He's got nothing to hold him there. So he takes off, obviously, with him. This is interesting. The Danites were expecting something. Where did they place their women and children and livestock?
In the front.
In the front. Well, that's... the opposite of what most military armies do. They're expecting a rear attack. Well, why would that be?
Because Micah's going to come after them.
They don't. They know Micah's wealthy. He's going to have friends, and they're going through another tribe's territory. What was that?
And mercenaries.
Exactly. As far as they're concerned, all right. Put the women and children up front because Micah's not going to come all the way around front to attack them. He'll come from behind, because that's where they're leaving. They're heading north. They're leaving. So he comes up. I don't know how many men he has with him. Obviously not enough to kill 500 Danites. Or 600, sorry. Whatever many men Micah had with him, it could be a lone man, but just by himself, it could have been hundreds. Who knows? Either way, he couldn't do it. But I like Danites' response. Okay. Let's see. Where was I? Was that... verse... Oh, so God is in Micah's house. Micah calls up and says, what concerns you? What do you want? He says, what do I want? You know full well what you did. He says, don't let your voice be heard. At least one of us come out and kill you. That's a strong response. Now, the Danites took these idols and took these graven images and everything else that was there. Because they wanted them for themselves. They were in search of God, just like Ellie pointed out earlier. Micah was in search of God. But this is important. Don't let us hear your voice again on this issue.
Because people would know who he was.
They all knew who he was. Micah was important. Micah was important for his territory, and everybody knew who this Levite was. And it would not be a good thing for word to get out what this Levite was doing at Micah's house. So, would anybody come to Micah's defense?
They knew the whole story?
If they knew the whole story, not likely. Not likely, because if they knew the whole story, they would know who the Levite was. And the entire tribe of Judah, and probably most of the tribes, would come kill and destroy Micah for what he did to this Levite. For, quote, corrupting him. Now, granted, the Levite was so complicit in this that it's really kind of unfair to blame it all on Micah. But because of who he was not supposed to be corrupted. And he quite lightly was corrupted. Money and ego go a long way sometimes, and people don't change, and we're pretty much the same today. Money and ego will travel us wherever we want to go. We also have to pay for it later. Okay. So he turns around. All right, I can't stop you. Fine. They go up north, they conquer the territory, they conquer this little Laishan town, which is the biggest town in the area. They conquer it. So Dan is now divided into two tribes. Southern half, northern half. Two different territories. Now let's actually get into a little bit. This didn't take too long at all. Make sure you didn't miss anything here. Hold on a minute. Yeah, I'll get to the name of the priest in a minute. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, it's actually very fitting that Micah, who was a thief, had his money stolen. It's actually very fitting. He was a thief. Just because you return something doesn't make you not a thief. You still stole something, which was still unacceptable. So that was just a fitting place. But verse 30, which it finally, after almost nearly two chapters, rattles off, who is this kid? Children of Dan set up for themselves the carved images, which is what Tammy was talking about. They're the ones who started it. Jeroboam may have continued, but they started it. They're just equally as responsible. These guys have been around a long time. They know what they want to do. And Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Manasseh, he and his children were priests for the tribe of Danite up until the day the land was exiled. Now, it doesn't say the day until the kings showed up. Land was exiled. That's all the way through the kings.
Yeah, all the way through it.
1,000 years? He and his family were the priests for the Danites, ruling over these carved images and using them as their tools. Wow. That's a profound family. The high priest is the only one that I know of has been able to take claim to have ruled over some area for that period of time. The high priest's family. Well, who was this kid? How did he get to do this? Because they misspelled his name. That's how they got to do it. How did they do that? That was, it's still recorded in all your Torah manuscripts that have the actual Hebrew letters. The spelling is marked. It is a misspelling. They did it on purpose. This isn't an ordinary individual. Let's finish the verse. They acted upon themselves. Micah's Carduncy made all days the house of God was in Shiloh, which was, almost 370 years. Okay. I'll let somebody else spell this out for me. Jeff, since you have your Bible sitting right there and it's open, it has the spelling.
Yeah.
It says in verse 30, let's see, where does it say? It says it, toward the end of the verse there.
The son of,
Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Manasseh. Will you be so kind as to spell the word Manasseh for me? The way it's spelled right there.
Without the added noon in there?
Both ways.
Okay. The way it is, I guess normally.
It starts in M.
Yeah, Mem, Sheen, and Hey.
Mem, Sheen, Hey. Now spell with the noon?
That'd be Mem, Noon, Sheen, Hey.
Now, where is the noon located?
They have it between the main and the sheen.
Is it right in line or is it up?
They have it kind of like.
It's up at a funny. Above. Above it, huh? It's up here.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Like a scribal addition.
Yeah, it's a scribal addition. They added that. So, actually, if it's an addition, then what is the name without the addition?
Moshe.
Moshe. What was Moses' son's name?
Gershom.
Gershom.
Oh, my goodness.
This guy was Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Moses. He was Moses' grandson. He was an important Levite. That's how the Danites knew who he was and recognized his voice. This isn't some ordinary little Levite kid.
The same voice as his grandpa.
That's why his voice was
known. Yeah. They would have known who he was.
That's probably when Glenn finished the idea that this happened well before Samson.
Exactly. This probably happened before Samson. During one of the other judges, most likely Othniel, could have been Ehud, about that age group. He was an important character. That's why the story is actually about him and what he did. As a Levite, he took what Micah started, which was downright evil. He wasn't a priest, but he was just a Levite.
Just a Levite.
But essentially, by being Moses' grandson, he has endorsed a second temple or tabernacle on the northern tribes. And he did it for 1,000 years, roughly. The story is actually about the Levite.
That's
not
why the story
Micah.
Is in here.
That's the story's there. This is the key. This is what one of the main factors that separated the northern and southern tribes. It's what a young man did for money.
Yeah, because they had what, two high places?
Yes, they had two high places. That was the first one.
Jeroboam.
Endorsed. And he did one further south. I don't know where the further south one is.
Shechem.
Yeah, it could be Shechem. Yeah, I think it probably was Shechem, which was Shechem's approximately here. It's near the middle of Ephraim.
And they kept the graven images.
They kept it.
And they kept them set up.
And they had been all the way until the exile, until they were fighting Nebuchadnezzar and whoever else came along and captured them all.
Do you think they did sacrifices?
Almost guaranteed. The story is about one very corrupt young man who wanted money and ego rather than God. That's why we read it today. It's called Micah's graven image.
Because the word Gershom hit me real quickly. That's
an unusual name. It's normally Gershon.
Yeah.
With a noon, not an M.
Right.
With a M. Well, Gershon is a totally different person. Different tribe, different area. Right. That's really common. The Gershom with an M is not normally spelt in Hebrew like that. It's usually with an N, not an M.
Moses
was the only one who had his son's name with a Gershom. Nobody else named their children Gershom. Gershon was common, but Gershom was not.
I've never seen this in a commentary.
Well,
you should look more commentaries. Actually, this is actually very, very common knowledge in nearly every Jewish commentary there is. Well, they purposely did that. They didn't just say, oh, well, you know what? We don't want anybody to know it's Moses. Let's spell it like no one would ever know. Noon, Shin, no one would know then. No one would know that they were trying to conceal who this kid was.
Yeah.
But they don't like making edits. Correction. They didn't used to like making edits. They do now. But they didn't used to like making edits. So when they made an edit, they usually try to mark it. We have to change something in the Bible. Well, okay, I'm having issues with this, but we'll change it, but we'll make a note of it. So they made a note of it by put the noon high up. So English will pronounce it Manasseh.
Yeah, did they do it? Why did they pick a noon? They could have put another sheen in there.
They could have put any letter of anything.
They could have done something.
But Manasseh is a super common name.
Yeah.
Oh, son of Gershom, son of Manasseh. Oh, just some Levite named Manasseh. Oh, whatever. Nobody would have cared. It also conceals Moses' name. Hank, I think Hank had his hand up first. Yes, Hank.
Yahweh, Jehovah.
Yeah, exactly. We do it all the time. Change God's name by adding a few letters, change his syllables. Yeah, just mess stuff around because we don't want anybody noting. Yes, Ellie.
The tribe of Dan has notoriously been contaminated by idolatry.
And this is why.
This is why.
This is where it all starts.
This is where it starts. This is where it starts.
And it is.
Yep.
Runs all the way through.
Well, that was fun. Did I answer everyone's question? I think I did. I don't think I missed anything. But could be some subtle questions, but I think they're pretty much taken care of. Did I miss anything? Yes.
Yeah, just a comment. Moses' wife was Jochebed, right?
That was his mom, wasn't it? That was his parents. His mother's wife. His mother's name was Jochebed.
Anyway, Moses' real wife would have been this boy's grandmother.
Grandmother. Yeah.
And she was, she came from.
Yeah, from Midian. A Midian priest. Midian. The daughter of a Midian priest.
If I explain a little bit about why the Book of Revelations leaves out the name of Dan.
Very well could be.
And also the very same thing that Moses said about Dan: "Await for your salvation. It's going to come later."
Mm-hmm.
Not going to come with the rest, but it's going to come after the rest of the deliverance.
Of the 12 tribes, when they go out, the last one is there.
Last one to come in.
Last one to come in. Last one.
So it has long-term implications upon that tribe.
Did Moses bless his children when he died?
I don't think so. It's not recorded. Most likely he did, as just a father blesses his son, but it's not written down, so we don't know what he said or didn't say. But that's quite interesting. I thought that was fascinating when I read about it. But hey, this is important.
Yeah.
Yes, explain a little bit. So, I actually finished 3 minutes early.
Well, woo-hoo! Check